Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
Welcome back to another episode of Seize the GM! Well, we have... Okay, so there's a couple of things that are kind of housekeeping-y things for... By the time this episode actually goes live, it will be kind of old news. Mm-hmm. Because I got new artwork for the show.
What?
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Well, it's better than you flicking off everything, you know?
It is. So, yeah, we will there will be posting of it on the show starting tomorrow, probably, because I'm going to go ahead and update all of them across all of the platforms so that everything knows where the new artwork is. And... it will be there, and it will be awesome, and it looks really good. And the other thing is I actually started a Facebook group for Seize the GM.
And so come in and join?
Come in and join, please. We have one member. Well, we have two members that are not us.
Yeah.
Well, hey.
We don't want to be yelling into an echo chamber.
It's true.
You know?
Sometimes it feels like that, but that's the beauty of podcasting.
That's fun to yell into echo chambers. They're all loud and warbly.
Yes.
That's true. You know?
So.
And it's always kind of nice to hear, you know, yell a word and just echo it back to you and just hear it over and over. It's so funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we have that, and... in a couple of weeks, I will be getting my new mixer.
Yay!
And then in June, probably after Origins, I will be getting my new computer.
Nice.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That'll be great.
At long last, I will finally have my new computer that I have needed.
Now, what's happening to the old one?
Oh, the old one had either it was a motherboard failure or a processor failure.
Well, what I mean is, are you still going to use it in some way, shape, or form, or is it going to be binned?
I have the hard drive.
Ah.
The hard drive was fine. All the data was there. The rest of the computer was shot. The only thing that was any good on it anymore was... as a backup only, was my old video card.
Hmm.
So, and the RAM, but it was like a gig of RAM total.
Oh.
Yeah, it was not very good.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those micro towers. Never get
good.
A micro tower.
those are good for, like, your kids.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
Not if you want to actually do any kind of video or audio editing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they're basically good for terminals, but
yeah,
not really yeah. workhorse machines.
Yeah. And they got Chromebooks now.
Yeah. And then when I'm done with that, hopefully, though, the one that I get will also eventually, because I want to get a good webcam and maybe start doing some videos and putting them up on YouTube.
Nice.
And maybe doing all of us doing it like that and maybe do some stuff or Twitch or some other thing to do live so people can see us if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That's what I've been up to.
Awesome.
So, Jules, what have you been up to this week?
Oh, boy. I've been playing video games a bit. I attempted and failed miserably at... I have a short story in my head. I tried to write it out, and my brain was just like, no, I'm not giving it to your fingers. No, mine. I'm like, brain, you're being a bitch. But, let's see. In the boring level front, I am starting finally to work on reseeding the side yard. So I got my little mower out, mow a little bit, take the grass clippings, go to the side yard, use my little diggy tool so I dig the thing up, water the area, throw the seeds down, throw the grass down.
Yeah.
I did this Tuesday and I'm still hurting.
Yeah, it's tough to do
that. But my lawn will look delicious when it's done.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And I don't use grass. I plant clover.
Huh. Yeah.
I am allergic to grass.
That is a great thing to do.
I am allergic to grass and so is my husband. If you keep it mowed, you can't really tell.
Yeah.
It's hardier than most grass, usually doesn't require as much water. And even better than that, you know, if you get like some of the clover flowers are good for bees. And, you know, I can deal with that.
Yeah.
Although you might attract infestations of leprechauns.
This is why I have a 10-pound crowbar. Mm. His name is Gordon. It's orange. The big orange.
Appropriate.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It whack a leprechaun. Doink. Doink.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. This thing is monstrous, too. I mean, this huge honking crowbar. And I'm like, yeah.
That's funny. I didn't see that when I was there last time.
Oh, it was in the shed.
Oh, that would
be
why.
We stayed inside. We stayed inside because
it was cold.
Yeah. I mean, the weather's getting warmer. It's getting a little nicer.
Oh.
And there is one drawback to the weather getting warmer.
What do you mean warmer?
It was 80 degrees today.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Wow. The heat index here was 92.
I'm in the area of DC, you know.
Yeah,
it's just,
I know.
But the one drawback of the weather getting warmer.
Is the weather getting warmer?
No, hot weather does not bother me at all. Ugh. It really doesn't. No, it means that, oh man, I gotta start shaving my legs again. Aw.
Yeah. I'm like, go bohemian.
Oh, look, it's more of the, when the weather gets nicer, I actually will wear a dress once in a while, and I don't wear pantyhose because fuck that shit.
Yeah.
I can look at it and it'll get a run, so I'll just, you know. So that means to look professional, I gotta shave. I'm like, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I will groan about that.
All right, Justin, so what have you been up to this week?
Oh, the fun of prepping for imminent surgery. Speaking of things that should be old news by the time this goes up.
Yeah.
The significant other is undergoing her second hip adjustment, essentially. Becoming more of a cyborg. So,
adjustment?
Well, top of bone goes out, new metal bone goes in.
Oh.
It's an adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's an adjustment. No, I thought you were getting like something, hip, like fusion to the lower part of the spine or something. No. Dude.
Yeah, no, she's having like a hip replacement.
Yep.
Oh, okay. I thought it was, you're doing metal. I thought because my brother-in-law had his knee replaced and they put in a cadaver knee. I didn't know they did metal.
Oh, that was the original. Originally, that's what they did. Because there's no rejection. It's titanium.
Oh.
Yeah.
So she's becoming more of a cyborg. So we are further enslaving ourselves to our future robot overlords.
No, you're not. She is becoming transhumanist.
Exactly. And the best thing about it, you can get a magnet and just like, You know, this is the, I'm heading out to the library, sweetie. Here's the number of the library. Clink. You know, while she's napping.
I don't know if she'd appreciate that.
Probably.
Well, no, this is in the future, man. This is in the future where it's like, I'm taking a nap. You want to go out to the library because they're doing some kind of cool thing because libraries do cool things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but finding a note magnetized to her hip.
It's so funny.
It's funny until she kills me, but it is funny until that point.
Yeah. Yep.
Still hilarious, though. Oh, come on. I don't have much in my life.
Yeah. Well, all right. So, speaking of metal, we're going to dive right into our main topic here. And that is going to be... It sounds really weird, but the title of it is Too Many or Not Too Many? That is the question.
I didn't come up with that one.
No, blame those guys. That was me. That was all me. Basically,
like I would think like the mini mystery or something like that, you know.
Now, this is whether or not you use miniatures in your game.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no. Okay, let's move on.
Oh, you're so boring.
For me, it depends. It depends.
Okay.
It does depend.
Yeah. Like D&D, you'll probably need minis.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on the style of D&D you're playing. If you're doing a bit more combat focused, yeah, you probably need minis. But if you're trying to edge away from combat a lot, not as much.
Yeah. Yeah, I am a glutton. As I have stated many times before, I am a waiting impatiently member of the Reaper's Bones 3 set.
Oh,
they are so cool.
Which I ended up. I paid less than $1 a mini.
How much did you spend?
Do I need to divulge the amount?
Well, I mean, you don't have to.
Well, tell us what else you could have bought with the amount of money, too.
There you go.
The core set was $100.
You spent more than that.
You bought more than that.
Oh, each stretch goal unlocked a new potential mini. And then they started doing sets where it was like $60 gets you this set and $60 gets you this set. And they even did a Cthulhu set that had it wasn't actually Cthulhu because they've already got a Cthulhu mini like that. This was several other things. There was some cultists in it. Just random investigator people. So a lot of things that look very 20s-ish. I spent $285 on minis.
Legit.
I have a mini coming that is 18 inches tall. That is a chromatic 5-headed dragon.
Dude!
Yeah.
Tiamat?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It is when this comes, there will actually be a YouTube video of me unboxing everything. Because I've wanted to do one and I'm just gonna do it on my phone. And I've already told my wife, like when it comes, she goes, "Can I at least open the box?" I said, "You can open it, but then you have to seal it back up." Because I would open it again. And she's like, okay. But I just found
you should see if you can rent like a camera from a place.
I might.
Just to get like a nice high quality video of it.
Yeah, I might. Or see if anybody that I know has one. Mm-hmm. And so I did find out that there is going to be the last container was in as of Friday was at customs in Texas waiting to be released. Once it clears customs, it gets delivered, and they're hoping that it can be before the end of April and then start shipping. And I'm in the second wave, which means they said that they should be able to get them. The first wave, I think they said they got done in 3 days the last time. And the way it was originally set up is it was set up so that they had like a month between waves. And they said they're not going to do that. They're going to just, as soon as one wave is done, they're going to take like half a day, reorganize everything, consolidate, start right back up again the next morning.
Nice.
And trying to get as many of these out as fast as they can. So, yeah, it's going to be insane once it actually all starts happening.
So, what I'm hearing is, in the question, too many or not too many, your answer is yes.
Yes.
Very yes.
Yeah.
The thing is, a lot of people always just say, oh, I don't want to go out and buy, you know, little statues. I don't know how to paint them.
You don't have
I'm like, no.
They can pre-paint
them,
this.
I have some actually, do, yeah. we did minis, and for the big bad, you know, it's, you don't always have to go out and buy minis, you know. We've used Monopoly pieces before. I actually use a stuffed Tux the Penguin one time as the big bad monster. You know, it's sometimes also good for, you know, giving scale.
Yes.
If you mm-hmm. really need to, like, you don't want to paint minis. You want something that's comfortable and familiar, though.
I can't.
You can always buy Legos. We legit have played D&D with Lego.
You can.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
But, you know, if you're like me, you can't, I mean, and I will honestly say I cannot paint minis. But there's some interesting, sometimes they have them on Kickstarter, you know, of just cool looking figures, and they're painted, they're really, really sweet looking. You're like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just because they're pretty. And you can always... And here, this is what some of my friends do. They travel a lot for their job, and they travel all over the world. And what they'll do is they always have, at least he's been able to find them, they're these like little teeny weeny touristy who's like little doll things. They're like teeny weeny plastic dolls. And they have like Mexico, or they have Argentina, or they have Russia or something on it. You can use those. We did. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Zippy. Picked up the little washer and I was like, I'm the red thread again. I'm like, gosh dang it. Did it again. No. Or meeples. Go and pick up some meeples.
Yeah.
You can buy them by the bag. And they sound, and they're fun to say. And they make plushy ones too. Meeple.
Yeah.
Meeple.
Now, as I said though at the top of the show, of the topic, I'm not a fan of minis. I actually kind of prefer not to have them in my game if I can help it.
Okay.
In general, I find them limiting, and it really depends on the players I have. Because if I have certain types of players who, when they see miniatures in front of them, they see a landscape in front of them, that is what they see. They don't, there's no kind of, you know, ambiguous, this stuff is here. Well, they don't see it, so that's not there to them. Whereas if we're playing games without miniatures, then they're fine with kind of just describing things and accepting them being there.
Sure,
so I find the having that playset is just kind of a limiting thing to certain players.
But sure. You get somebody like me, and I can't visualize distance randomly. You know, it's just like, oh, he's like 6 feet in front of you. I can't visualize that. But if you put it out there, even if it's just, you know, you get like two checker pieces, and I'm like, okay. I'm a teeny weeny weeny bit under 5 feet tall. All right. And I don't know why it is I can't visualize it, but I'm like, okay.
You're not the only one.
So
my wife is the same way. Like we used to play Vampire and the World of Darkness games. And
yay.
We had the guy who would run it before my wife started playing, like, he never used any kind of markers or anything to tell people where things were. It was all theater of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody that was playing at the time could do this. My wife cannot. She has to see it. And as soon as he realized that she has to visually see the area,
mm-hmm.
so that she can make correlations of distances and everything else, then it works for her. And everything clicks and she's fine. It doesn't have to be everything perfect and, you know, perfectly built landscape and everything else. It can be completely flat, a couple of contour lines. We're here, this guy's here, the bad guy's over here. What are you guys doing?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, my thing is, like, you know, especially if it's something, you know, fantasy-based or something very, very unfamiliar, I can't really visualize it. And if they're like, okay, you know, it's difficult if you just give numbers.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's as big around as a quarter. Okay, I can imagine that.
Yeah.
But when you get to past certain distances, either draw me like a reference map or something else like that, because I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people are great at visualizing those things. Like, I can do it. Like, when somebody says, you know, in a fight, it's like, oh, he's 12 feet away. It's like, okay, so I can easily cover that distance in two steps or three steps and hit him. Oh, yeah, totally. Okay, cool. That's what I do. You know, whereas, you know, other people are just like, what do you mean you take three? That doesn't make any sense. It's like, it does, but, you know, you have to understand it. You have to be able to visualize distance. And if you can't, minis are a great way to do that. Plus, I just love them. They're so cool.
I'll be honest, getting them just because they're neat looking, especially when there's like a special edition of like the ones that came with Shadowrun Hong Kong, or if there's, you know, Deadlands or something. Well, you like them, they're awesome.
The old D&D miniatures line that was the game, and then they were also usable in the RPG.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I have all the dragons.
Oh, lucky.
All of them. I've even got like the white, the evolution one. I mean, I have them all. Because
something ridiculous.
Yeah. I wanted them all. Once I saw the first one, I'm like, I have to own all of these. This is amazing. And the only one that they never produced was a green dragon. So I was like, I want a green dragon to finish my chromatics because I don't have a green dragon. And so I finally found Paizo did one that was a case incentive for one of their lines was a green dragon. So I'm like, I'll just wait. Once that case incentive becomes available to anybody to purchase, I'll buy one. And it was like a couple of months after they became available, I picked it up, put it up on my shelf with the rest of my dragons, and I now have all five. And then the best part is once I get my new one, I've got the queen to put with them.
Nice.
So I've also done I have a kaiju.
Which one?
It is the one that Reaper did. They basically built a kaiju. They did a kaiju, and it's like, here he is. Enjoy. And there are pictures of him on the Facebook page, if I remember correctly. Because I loved painting it so much. It took me almost a year to paint because it was just so big. and I did so many layers and everything else with it that it literally took me a year to do. So.
Yeah, the thing is, though, that with minis, you can't buy them a lot. Well, you can a little bit, and especially with 3D printing. By the way, there's a website you can actually, you know, if a dude in your gaming group's like birthday's coming up, you can actually create your own mini, which is kind of cool. And, you know, those are cool. But, you know, if you're somebody like me and I can't paint them, stuff like that, when you're using them, it's difficult to get pre-painted minis that don't feel, the other thing we've used are HeroClix, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Cause they're color, but it's, you know, it's kind of sad that, you know, minis, they expect you to be able to paint them and all this stuff. And if you physically can't, you kind of feel like, you can paint them.
That's when you have people like me who you ask, hey, I want to buy this mini. Could you paint it for me? And there are some people that'll be like, well, sure, I'll do it, but it's going to be, you know, it'll cost this much to do.
Exactly.
And in a lot of cases, if you have friends that are willing to do it, like, yeah, I have pictures on the Facebook page. I'm going to actually copy all of them and move them over to the Facebook group so people can see them. But I did a bloody altar. I've got these like pillars of chaos or evil or something. And then I've got a gargantuan skeleton warrior that's like a giant skeleton. And then my kaiju. And I took a bunch of pictures of the kaiju, a bunch of pictures of the big skeleton and stuff. So as I start doing more with the setup for when I get all of my Reaper stuff, as I start painting things, I'm going to start putting them in there.
Nice.
So that people can see. And I do it because I find it calming.
Yeah. The thing is, though, there's also, and I'm not talking just character minis. There are, and here's the thing that you can use, and especially if you really want to, if you're running like Little Fears, if you want to creep something out, you want to go to like a thrift store. See if they have any old dollhouses.
Yes.
You know, a little dollhouse furniture. It doesn't always have to be, you know, dudes on a grid. Like sometimes you can actually use it to help build an atmosphere.
Okay, hold on now. Before you start getting into that, we actually have another episode scheduled. The rest of this series is basically about doing things to improve atmosphere and whether or not to use terrain and props.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, but what
those
I'm,
are coming, is folks.
But what I'm saying is also, it's just like if you have like the dollhouse and you can, it helps also is like, well, could I see so-and-so from the bedroom across the hall? And if you look at it, it's actually kind of nice because you have that 3D terrain. You can actually kind of, you know, barbecue skewers, you know, like for shish kebabs.
Yeah.
Are wonderful because you can like hold it at one dude and then point it and see if it'll hit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know, you're trying to rules everything, but if you can do that and they can visually see it, it's weird. Dowel rods, string in, you know, you can actually like pull, it's just like, do I have line of sight? And from mini to mini, yep.
Yeah.
Or is this dude blocking me because it's a monster, but you're kind of, it doesn't fit in all the squares the way you want it. And you're like, that dude's in the way.
Yeah, totally. And I've done that before, like using various items to determine like line of sight for minis and stuff like that, because sometimes you need to. And there are drawbacks to using minis.
Oh yeah, they'll play to the board instead of the brain.
Yeah, and that can be rough because if you're trying to tell more of a story type of game, then the reason that you're using them is not to make, you know, really cool looking minis that everybody can enjoy. But at that point, if you're doing more of a story-based game, my advice would be, honestly, don't waste time and money unless it's something that you want to do. Go ahead, get Monopoly pieces, get chess pieces, checkers, anything like that. They're super cheap. You probably have them laying around your house somewhere. Also, like Legos or sorry pieces. You know, there are tons of little things that you can use to give you those elements that you need if you're just trying to find, you know, distance or trying to set it so that people can realize, oh, this dude's up here, you're down here, and there's all this other stuff in the middle. And I've done that, and it's a great thing. And I use dice for stuff like that too from time to time. If I know I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to bother with getting everything out, I'll just use dice in place of minis.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a marker. It's something to tell you where things are.
Yeah. It's important, but it's not, you know, dire.
Right. It's not the end all be all.
Yep.
But yeah. And for those of you who enjoy doing it, like me, do it. Do it because you enjoy it. Don't do it because you feel that you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So. But I think we can just keep beating this thing into the ground of you should use minis, you shouldn't use minis. These are things you can use. We've kind of given you a good primer on what to do. And if you get a chance, look on Kickstarter. Go to your local game store. See if they've got any. D&D just started doing unpainted minis that look amazing. I'm actually looking at picking up some for just having. Because they just look so cool. Like, I'm going to pick up some. They've got some Illithids. And it's like 2 or 3 Illithids for like $3. And I'm like, I can't beat that price. I want some. So
I mean, you've got your dragon set done, so you get to work on another species.
Well, I am going to run a campaign. I am going to run an Underdark game, so I need to start building up some of those. I need
Dryad.
No, my drow are working differently. My drow, like Dryder, the whole entire thing, all of mine are different. And the big thing is that I'm not using spiders. I'm going to use scorpions.
Nice.
And change. So going
kind of going the Final Fantasy route with spiders then.
No.
A lot of Final Fantasies have like scorpion tails for some reason. They're spiders. Don't know why. But why not?
No, not that. They're actually, instead of having the spider lower body, they're going to actually have a scorpion lower body. I'm going to actually hand build all the big bad guys that are striders. Because my drow aren't tied to the same things. I've been doing this, like my drow go way back, like before even like 3.5 was really starting to kick off. I had already started working on my own reasons for why the drow were the way they were. Nice. And it was because they were actually tied to the plane of shadow.
Cool.
So they look at things a way lot different. So, yeah. But that's for a different time. So,
although now I'm trying to have brainstorming around the concept of what would an Underdark dryad look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
mushroom?
Maybe.
Big mushroom tree?
Maybe.
So, but let's go ahead and roll into our stat blocks.
Yay!
And now we enter Stat Blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight.
All right, we've got our Stat Blocks. I am going to go first because mine is the shortest.
I'm sorry.
No, no, it's fine. But the reason is that because then you guys go and then I'll do the lexicon. See?
Hey,
that way I'm not all talking in a row.
Speaking of stat blocks, if you haven't checked up on our site recently, we have started putting up weekly blog posts of stat blocks that are a little too big for the podcast itself. So you guys should go check it out.
Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. You should. I'm also thinking about trying to put together my world building 101B. So I'm going to be working on that here soon too. So, all right. Keratin, the faithful. He is a faith healer like no other. He is able to heal the lame and the afflicted. Keratin is able to use anything that he touches to channel the power of his gods to heal you. Whether he blows air on you or hits you with his shirt or pours a drink on you. He preaches to large groups of people and gets them to pay him to do the things that he does. Is he a charlatan? Most likely if you use him in a fantasy setting. In a modern or science fiction setting, then he may or may not be. It could be interesting if he was actually able to heal with a touch, being powered by the gods. Now, is he actually able to do this, or is it just that people think that they're better? This is actually for the game to determine. If you want a reference for this guy, think Benny Hinn, the TV evangelist.
Nice.
Yeah. Stupid YouTube videos of TV evangelists. I saw one and I was just like, oh my God, this is, I have to do one on him now. So, all right, we're just going to go straight in order. Jules, next.
I apologize, this is long, but it should be interesting. Welcome to the Dance by Wire Club. I take it this is your first time coming? Well, welcome. You're in for an experience like no other. Trust me. Okay, first we need you to take a little test. No, nothing like that. We're seeing your natural dance ability and getting measurements for your range of motion. Great. I see you have some skill wires, too. I need to know what rating they are. We have a wide variety of dance skill slots for you to rent. We need to make sure that the dance style and skill soft rating match up with your cyberware. To see the whole catalog, pick the dance catalog's AR icon. Fantastic. You see that little map AR icon? Yeah, that displays the club's layout. The club's kind of set up like a coliseum with 7 floors. Floor 7 is at the top, and it's the largest. People of all skill levels can dance here. There's 3 bars on this floor and various smattering of booths where you can order something to snack on. Yep, the floors are clear. You can see through them. I'll explain in a minute. Floors 6 through 1 are restricted. No, it's not a money thing. It's actually based on how well you dance. Better dancers get access to the lower levels, hence the smaller and smaller floors. When there is a truly spectacular dancer, everyone wants to see him. So this setup makes it easier. No, you're not confined to that floor. Your floor access allows you to dance on that floor and all the floors above. And yep, there are bars on every floor. Right below floor 1 is the DJ booth. Old Man QWERTY usually spins. That old dwarf had a reputation back in the day as one of the most unconventional deckers. Heck, even in retirement, he comes up with unconventional uses for tech. You ever heard of a TechNet program? Yeah, you know, where everyone's kind of networked in, using the network, and everyone gets a little boost. Well, Old Man QWERTY found a better use for it. Everyone kind of feeds their music and dance vibe into the TechNet. That data is fed to the DJ, and he melts it into the music and then sends it all out into the club patrons. No, it's not invasive. It's not anything like that. Actually, kind of think of like, turning a set of headphones into speakers and with a receiver. It's shared while you want to share, and you can turn the speakers back into headphones anytime you like. I know, it's not a perfect metaphor, but it's still pretty awesome. And it's actually cut the rate of bar fights down by 70%. Excellent. Seems like you finished all the movement tests and stamina tests. You have access all the way down to floor 1. Enjoy yourself, Maria Hernandez, and please don't hesitate to message me if there's anything I can do for you.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Very nice.
You like?
I love the Easter egg thrown in there at the very end.
You're welcome.
That's fun.
It was the only way I could think of to describe the Dance by Wire Club, because otherwise it would sound so clinical.
Yeah.
Describing what goes on. So I did it as a concierge.
That's fun. I like
it. You like it?
Very nice.
And I'm very glad. Thank you. I was so worried you guys, like, the Easter egg would be like, everyone like, what is that?
No, that is if anyone knows Shadowrun lore, then you know who that is. So enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm sorry it was long, but I hope you all enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did. All right. No.
Yay! Please tell me it's another catalog item.
Catalog item.
Yes!
Hit it.
Fordham the Bear. Children need protection, but even the greatest of guardians need their own rest. The catalog presents the means to ensure these guardians can sleep easy with their latest child care product, Fordham the Bear. Fordham appears to be, to any layman observer, as a mere soft and plush teddy bear. But when within 50 feet of a sleeping child, Fordham will arm and defend the area from any perceived threats. Fordham the Bear comes standard equipped with his mighty sword, Nightbearer shield, and disjunction potions. Accessory packs include his mighty tiger steed, the astral armor of infinite slumber, and a potion of warm snuggles. Using these items, he will strike down even the mightiest of foes who dare fight against the ward he is tasked to defend. Asterisk. Manufacturer's warning. Fordham's ability to determine if a being is considered a child is related solely to state of mind, and beings who have been overexposed to the horrors of the real world will no longer be able to receive Fordham's protection. Fordham's protection may also extend to legal adults should their innocence and virtue still remain intact within their hearts, mind, and body. Fordham's childhood protection does not depend on chronological age. Machine wash warm, rumbly tumbly dry only. Second asterisk. Catalog warning. Fordham is designed to protect children from all perceived threats, including monsters, dream eaters, math, waking them up before they've had enough sleep, Draculas, the clinically boring, and the seventh flavor of the color yellow. The catalog is not responsible for Fordham's actions against these perceived threats. The only friend Fordham recognizes is children that are sleeping. Fordham the Bear. Sleep tight. Fordham won't let the bed bugs bite. Order of caution, all purchases are recorded, and authorities will be notified.
That's lovely.
That is great.
That is delightful, sir. Delightful.
I
always kind of like that picture that circles the web of the little teddy bear standing above the kid and the big, giant, ridiculously well-drawn monster on top of it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That is great. All right, well, let's go ahead and step into our lexicon.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
Okay, I like to keep that break long there. Mm-hmm. All right, lexicon, our word today is hecatomb. Anybody know what it means?
A tomb you get the heck out of?
Yes, that is exactly what it is. No, it's not.
Had to try.
All right. Hecatomb, it is a noun. Now, the definition, there are two that we are going to stick with for this one. The first one is actually an ancient Greek or Roman sacrifice of 100 oxen or cattle. And the second is a slaughter or sacrifice of many victims.
Oh, Full Metal Alchemist creating the Philosopher's Stone kind of thing.
Sure, except this actually is actual practice that was done by the Greeks and the Romans.
I know.
So,
but if somebody wanted a modern kind of thinky tie-in,
yeah,
think that.
Yeah. Yep. So the origin and etymology of hecatomb, it's comes to us from Latin, which is hecatomb, from Greek, which is hecatomb, from hecaton, which is 100, and B, which is akin to a Greek cow. So it actually translates to more at 100 cow. And its first known use was about 1592. So, yeah.
That's interesting that it describes a Greek and Roman practice, but it wasn't quite coined until long after those civilizations had kind of been kind of rebuilt.
Right. Yeah, which is one of those things. I think it was that they knew that it was done, but the word actually being like cataloged, for lack of a better term, it was one of those things that I think had always existed. People knew the word, but they didn't ever actually write it down until that point. So yeah, but that is our lexicon. And now, before we get into our closing remarks, with knowing that Justin is going to be out, there's going to be a lot more of just Jules and I doing shows for a little while as we wait for Justin to be able to get back to us. But, and we have stuff planned all the way out to Origins. And so we will be getting, we will keep getting stuff out to you guys every week. We've got it all planned, and we're going to make it through all of this, even with my move in place.
Because it's been a crazy couple of months.
Yeah, the next 2 months. So if we do miss a week, realize that that's what's going on, and we will try to let everybody know in the Facebook group or on the blog that we're going to be out for a week or whatever with trying to coordinate stuff. And we're going to probably try to get a couple of interviews in all of this time. So hopefully it'll all work. And I'm going to interview with the help of Jules. We're going to try to corner Eric DeMage and make him sit down and talk with us.
As best we can.
Yeah. So, all right. So, closing remarks. No, go.
So, I caught Disney's latest kind of princess movie thing, Moana.
Oh.
I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Moana?
Moana, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm terrible at that whole pronunciation thing, even though I've heard it like over and over again while watching the movie. But Moana's fantastic.
Nice.
If you have not caught it yet, it is a Disney movie that doesn't try to throw a love story into it. It's got very powerful main character, very powerful secondary characters. It's just fun. It explores an area of mythology that Disney hasn't really been to yet. And I highly recommend it.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Awesome. That is great.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the main character is really awesome. And I could go on and on about how much I hate the movie Frozen. This is so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Look, I'm just saying, if you sit there and sing a song about letting it go and then immediately revert back, why did you just sing the Ice Palace theme song just now? It just, you yeah, wasted my time with your musical number because it meant nothing.
Yeah, well.
Yep. You know, but when you hear any of the musical numbers from Moana, it's just like, you're welcome.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's awesome. All right, Jules, go.
All right. I found a YouTube series called Terrible Writing Advice. And it's done by an actual author, and it's kind of like it's like rudimentary flash animation kind of style, but pretty much it's terrible writing advice. Pretty much do not do what this guy says. And this guy's a successful writer, and he's like, you know, how to science fiction, writer's block, how to deal with like a chosen one kind of thing, post-apocalyptic, and all those stupid, annoying, freaking tired tropes. You know, he's actually goes in and tries to explain, you know, he's explaining what not to do by telling you what to do. And it's just, you know, and the reasons you don't do it are the reasons that you should do this. And it goes into like urban fantasy, Mary Sue's, dystopian futures. Oh my, I could not stop laughing because we've all read those horrible, horrible, horrible kinds of books where, oh my God. But he goes into it and is like, why a lot of people use them, but it's sarcasm in reverse, and I can't stop laughing. And the flash animation is kind of like circle mouth, the eyes kind of roll back with that smiley trolley face. It's ridiculous, but it's so well done. It allows you to remember it.
I definitely want to check that out, because depending on the tone he's using it, I mean, there are reasons sometimes to use tropes and cliches.
Yeah, so this is the why not to. This is the...
Right, right. Well,
you know, it's why it's called terrible writing advice.
Right, that's why I want to look at, that's why I want to look at it, just to kind of get a grasp on just what angle he's coming at it from.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I highly, highly recommend it. It's, you know, how it's fantasy races. And it's just like, why would you want to think up something on your own? Everyone knows these things, so use them. They're, you know, they're standard. You don't have to explain anything. it's done so tongue-in-cheek sarcasm. I loved it.
That's great.
So, you know, this is good stuff for even not just that, but creating NPCs, you know, the chosen ones. That one just dropped actually about 2 hours ago. And it's, oh my God. So,
that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to close this out here, and I have two.
Lucky.
So yeah, greedy.
Well, one is a re-shout out because... I've been talking with Jeffrey and Michael over at the World Builders Anvil for the last couple of weeks, and it's another podcast. They're a lot of fun. It's a lot of writing and trying to help people figure out how to world build for writing for the most part. And it's a fun show. I've used some stuff out of it for trying to figure out how I want to organize a couple of other ideas that I've got for doing my own worlds for various games. So it's just kind of a little shout out for them, because it's been a fun show to listen to. And the other one that I got is, it's a comic called Sky Doll, and it's by Titan Comics, and it is a French comic redone in English. And for those who remember, like, the late 80s heavy metal, it screams that. It is super cool. It's like, take one of those little short comics that were in heavy metal and make it into a series.
Wicked.
and it just started up. So by the time this drops, they may be on the second or third issue. Try to find it. It is so good so far. So.
Woohoo.
Sky Doll. So good. Go to your local comic shop and buy comics anyway. Because, yeah. But I think that kind of wraps it up, folks. And it has been fun. And I think we are good for this. And we will see you guys all next time on Seize the GM.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zended,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at Null Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at Seize the GM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zended@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by the Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.0, unported license.